Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 25th, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Working at the Abscess Wash, Irrigation of Cutaneous Abscesses. And our guest skeptic is Chip Lang. Chip is an emergency medicine physician assistant working primarily in rural Missouri in community hospitals. He has an international experience in critical care and emergency medicine. Currently, he's working on developing a new blog and podcast specifically for PAs in emergency medicine, but wants all those who take care of critically ill or injured patients to be able to learn. Welcome to the SGEM, Chip.
Thanks, Ken. I'm glad to be on the show. This has been an eye-opening endeavor to see how a pro such as yourself runs their blog and podcast. You have this down to a science.
Well, I am very excited to have you on the show, Chip.
Why is that, Ken?
Well, because if we are going to cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year, then all of those providing EM care must be aware of the evidence, including PAs.
Yeah, and there are a lot of PAs working in emergency departments right now.
And providing great emergency care takes a team. Patients deserve the best care from the moment they reach out to access EM services until being discharged home. And this includes all of those involved in the pre-hospital setting, the team in the emergency department, and in the inpatient unit. That is why we've had RNs, physiotherapists, EMS, pharmacists, and others on the SGEM. So I am very pleased to have our very first physician assistant on the SGEM.
I could not agree more. To me, one of the biggest things about having PAs in the healthcare system is that we provide excellent care to patients during all aspects of their stay. We are continuing to be utilized in more facets with even more unique roles with times such as development of pre-hospital PAs. That one in particular is something I am trying to promote since I have seen the benefits of advanced providers in such an arena. No matter what we are, though, our goal is the same as everyone else in the hospital, and that is to provide the best quality care possible.
Well, Chip, can you tell the worldwide SGEM audience who might not be familiar with physician's assistants, what is your training and typical responsibilities in the emergency department?
Sure, Ken. This is always a little tricky as there are some differences based on our setting, experience, specialty, and laws. However, we are all nationally certified and state-licensed medical professionals that work as part of a healthcare team with physicians and other providers that see, diagnose, and treat patients. Especially in emergency medicine, our roles vary greatly. We have everything from the lowest of acuity patients to the most critically ill. Although we work in collaboration with the physician, there are emergency departments that are only staffed by PAs and do not have a physician in the department at all. Given the way we work, we train in a very similar manner to medical students. After completing our undergraduate training, we attend a graduate program that is 2 to 3 years in length usually. The prerequisites are very similar to those of medical students. Topics are very similar to medical school, and some schools even share medical student classes. Most programs require previous medical experience, which for me was a firefighting and EMS background. After our training, we take a national certification exam and at this time complete a recertification exam every 10 years with additional education in 2 year cycles.
Well, I know you're an SGEM listener, so you know that we like to start these things off with a case. So what case did you bring today?
So we have a 30-year-old female with a history of abscesses coming to your ED stating that she thinks she has another one developing on her arm. She tells you that she wants to do as little as possible to treat the abscess using an incision and drainage because she hates the pain from the procedure, especially the irrigation.
Well, abscesses are a very common complaint in the emergency department, and there is much up for debate about the management of abscesses.
Yeah, the mainstay management of an abscess is incision and drainage. Other management may include wound culture and sensitivity, pain control, packing, and antibiotics.
Well, there is a lot of dogma around wound care, and we've covered some of these issues before in the SGEM. With regards to abscesses, we've discussed packing or not packing. Our bottom line in 2012 was that routine packing of simple cutaneous abscesses might not be necessary.
Another issue that has been debated is whether or not to routinely prescribe antibiotics.
A study by Hankin and Everett, Are Antibiotics Necessary After Incision and Drainage of a Cutaneous Abscess, was published in Annals of Emergency Medicine in 2007. We reviewed this paper on SGEM number 13. Our conclusion at that time was that the evidence did not support using antibiotics routinely in simple cutaneous abscesses, even in the era of MRSA.
Wasn't there a new study looking at trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole versus placebo for uncomplicated skin abscess?
Yes, Chip, thanks for bringing that up. It was by David Tallon et al. And published in the New England Journal of Medicine in March of this year. We'll be reviewing this study soon on the SGEM, but we're getting a little off topic. This episode, we're looking at irrigation of abscesses post-IND, not antibiotics.
Apparently, there is no RCT demonstrating the benefit of irrigation in the treatment of simple cutaneous abscesses.
And treating these conditions can be painful, and it takes time, and there's a financial cost involved.
There is also the risk of contamination to the patient and EM provider, like the PA doing the irrigation.
So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer today?
Does irrigation of an abscess after drainage reduce the need for further intervention?
And what's the reference?
Chinook and Hendy, Irrigation of Cutaneous Abscess Does Not Improve Treatment Success, Annals of Emergency Medicine, 2016.
All right, so let's run through that PICO, the population intervention, comparison, and outcome. So what was the population?
Emergency department patients greater than 18 years old with a cutaneous abscess.
And then they excluded pregnant patients, patients in police custody or a prison resident, a patient that was admitted to hospital or taken to the OR, inability to follow up in 48 hours or to provide contact information for that 30-day follow-up. What was the intervention?
Incision and drainage plus irrigation.
And what did they compare it to?
Incision and drainage alone.
And what was their outcome?
Need for further intervention in the next 30 days after the initial incision and drainage. Interventions include repeat IND, antibiotic change, or abscess-related hospital admission within the next 30 days.
And so the author's conclusions were, quote, although there were baseline differences between groups, irrigation of the abscess cavity during incision and drainage did not decrease the need for further intervention. All right, Chip, let's run through the 11 quality checklists for randomized clinical control trials. The first question is, the study population, did it include or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yes.
Did they adequately randomize the patients?
Yes.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes.
And did they analyze the patients in the groups that they were randomized?
Yes.
Question 5. The study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
No, they state that enrollment was, quote, sporadic and non-consecutive, with most patients eligible not being enrolled.
Question 6. The patients in both groups, were they similar with regards to prognostic factors?
Unsure on that one.
Were the participants, and that means the patients, the clinicians, and the outcome assessors, were they all unaware of their group allocation?
No. The randomization was blinded, but after group allocation, patients and clinicians knew what group they were in.
Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
So no, the irrigation group more often received packing and antibiotics.
And how was the follow-up? Was it complete, as in at least 80% for both groups?
Yes, it was approximately 89.5%.
And all patient-important outcomes were considered?
Yes.
And the final question, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No.
All right, let's run through the key results here. They got 209 patients enrolled, with 187 completing the study. The median age was in the late 30s, and just over 40% being female.
Primary outcome. No difference in need for further intervention at 30 days.
So they had 15% in the irrigation group that needed further intervention versus 13% in the non-irrigation group.
Yes, so this was a 2% difference with a 95% confidence interval of -8 to 12%.
Now, there were some differences, though, between the two groups. The irrigation group was about 5 years younger, had packing more often, 89% versus 75%, and received outpatient antibiotics more often, 91% versus 73%. But Chip, let's talk a little nerdy about this, and I came up with 5 things that we could go through. And the first thing was that this is a single-centered study, and with a high rate of MRSA, which may limit its generalizability to other practice settings.
The second point was that it was not consecutive. Patients were not recruited consecutively, but rather sporadically, and most eligible patients were not enrolled. This could have introduced some selection bias into the study. The authors state, quote, however, we do not believe the results were biased because patients were enrolled on all days of the week, both day and night, end quote.
And the third thing was, the groups were unbalanced at baseline. And what I mean by that is in the irrigation group, they were 5 years younger. Now, while this is statistically significant, it's probably not a clinically important difference.
Number four, they were treated differently. The two groups were not treated equally. The irrigation group was more likely to receive packing and receive antibiotics. There is evidence suggesting packing does not make a difference, although it is relatively weak.
And the issue of outpatient antibiotics after incision and drainage is even more complicated, given the recent study by Talon et al. However, that should have biased the study towards irrigation being superior, and the key result was no statistical difference.
Another problem is the lack of standardization in the irrigation solution used, or the amount of irrigation.
And the fifth and final thing we wanted to mention was blinding. Patients and clinicians knew the group allocation, and this could potentially explain some of the variation in the treatment observed between the two groups. The lack of blinding and differences in the treatment make it more difficult to interpret these results. All right, those were the five things. Now let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We agree with the author that based on this data, that irrigation does not appear to improve outcomes after incision and drainage of abscesses.
However, the study does have significant limitations, and a future study with standardization treatment protocols would help clarify whether irrigation provides any efficacy. All right, Chip, give us a bottom line.
Irrigation of a cutaneous abscess after an initial incision and drainage is probably not necessary.
All right, you started this off with a case. Can you resolve the case?
You discuss with your patient that there is some evidence suggesting that irrigation does not appear to improve outcomes versus not doing the irrigation. With shared decision making, you decide not to do irrigation for your abscess.
So how are you going to take this paper and apply it to your practice as a PA?
Although abscess management varies by location and patient, irrigation may not be needed, as it does not seem to improve treatment success.
And so, Chip, what are you going to say at the patient's bedside? How are you going to explain this?
We know that incision and drainage can be painful, and we want to reduce that pain as much as possible. There's new evidence that suggests irrigation of your abscess may not be beneficial, and we can skip this painful part of the procedure if you would like.
That sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Sean Murphy, a physician assistant from Parry Sound, Ontario. He knew that appendicitis can present at any age, and the youngest person to have an appendectomy, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, was Sebastian Perez at 9 days old. What's the Keener question this week?
When using ultrasound to help differentiate cellulitis from abscess, what classic descriptive finding is present on ultrasound for cellulitis?
Well, if you think you know the answer to this question, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there's some FOMED resources out there on this issue. You can go to Core EM, Rebel EM, or Wiki EM, and I'll put those links on the blog. Thanks, Chip, for being the first PA to be on the SGEM.
Thank you, Ken. This has been a great experience, and I hope to be back on the show again. I know abscesses are not as sexy as discussing sepsis or advanced airway management, but it is an important and common issue.
Well, as the guest skeptic, Chip, you get to give the SGEM tagline. So I'm wondering, you're from Missouri, but can you do it in your best Ozarkian accent?
All right. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learned, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.